for this, but essentially it's taking information about threats, and they do need to be relevant to you. Otherwise, you'll be searching forever. But you take that information and you essentially process it in a way that makes sense for the organization that you work for. And by processing, I mean either investigate for more information, tie it to other data that you have or have been tracking, make sure your stakeholders are aware of this information, make sure it's disseminated properly.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to episode 44 of the Textual Topo. I'm your host, HB, where we talk about all things tech-related and non-tech-related. Today we got a special guest for you guys. Her name is Shamika. You might have seen her on TikTok as the bougie blurred. But yeah, we're gonna get it in, and I appreciate everybody that's been supporting the podcast. I moved the podcast over the bus route, and you guys have really been downloading the podcast. So keep it up. Share it out with your friends, leave reviews, and yeah, man, I just appreciate everything you guys do for me. And without further ado, let's welcome in our guest. What's going on, everybody, man? We got our lovely guest right here. She is from the Bay. Her name is Shamika. Let's give her a round of applause really quick.
Happy to be here.
So, with you being from the Bay, how you feel about your Warriors? You think y'all going to bring it home again?
Of course we're going to bring it home. If for no other reason than I want another parade, because Warriors parades are lit. People go crazy. It's like one of the best days to be in Oakland is a day of a Warriors parade. Like I've had probably the most fun ever on the last two. So I would love to attend a third.
Okay, I'm good. All right. I wouldn't know anything about the team. Well, I really don't like teams. I like players. And unfortunately, you know, I don't even want to talk about basketball. I stopped really watching it once I started seeing that foolishness going on. But
I mean, I'm not a huge sports fan, but what I will say is, honestly, every Warriors fan is a bandwagon fan, because I grew up here and wasn't nobody caring about the Warriors. Until they made it to the playoffs the first time, we wasn't claiming them. I guess they had a run in the 80s, but that was before my time.
And that's how I feel. I'm from Louisiana, so that's how I feel about the Saints. Like, when I was growing up, nobody liked the Saints. It was the Cowboys or the 49ers. Then all of a sudden, after Katrina, they start winning some. Everybody Saints fans. I was like, get out of here. Yeah. You can't name me nobody past Drew Brees.
The only team that people from the Bay Area, and specifically people from Oakland like myself, actually championed was the Raiders, no matter what. Even though they were absolutely terrible and haven't been to the Super Bowl since I was at least 12, we never gave up on them until they moved to Las Vegas. Then we were like, all right, y'all can go. But the Warriors, when they were bad, we didn't talk about them.
So are you a Rams fan? You like the Rams now since like the Raiders gone, or still like the Raiders?
No, I don't champion any football anymore. I mean, I think I still have some Raiders gear around. Like, I'm not going to go as far as burning it. But, yeah, football to me was never my favorite sport. But going to the Raiders games as a kid was always a good time, win or lose.
Yeah. Actually, funny enough, I actually need to go to a professional football game. Like, it's crazy. I've been no more at all. Nah, I've been to more basketball than boxing, like, matches than actual, like, football stuff.
Mm. Yeah, football's fun in person. For me, pretty much all sports are fun if you're there on TV. Not so much.
Yeah, I don't know. But, no, well, I think that was a good little icebreaker. So, like, interview style, whatever. Like, who are you?
Who am I? That's a really good question. I'm a lot of things. I'm a Gemini, so let's start there. That pretty much means that I have an infinite amount of interest, and I have surface level knowledge about pretty much everything, because I'm just a very naturally curious person. I'm always asking questions, very inquisitive. I was born and raised in Oakland, as I mentioned earlier. I love to, you know, travel. I love the work I do. I actually been in cybersecurity for going on 4 years now, I worked in finance for maybe 10 years before that. So I'm still kind of feeling like a newbie in the space, but I really enjoy the work I'm doing because it does combine so many of my interests, like reading, writing, investigating, or stalking, if you ask my friends. but it's been a really good time. I think I'm a person who really wants to believe that we can solve these problems, you know, from a place of real, like, depth and humanity versus just doing our job. Like, there's people on the other end of the work we do, and that's really what's attracting me to this field.
Nice. And I don't know, man. It's like, it's crazy. Like, I guess, like, I wouldn't say we make similar content on TikTok, but I mean, I guess because I do cybersecurity hashtags whenever I do post some stuff from time to time. Like, you just popped up, and I was like, I've been meaning to, you know, get somebody that's in like CTA, like on a podcast. I was previously working at Goldman Sachs, so we always had like in the meetings, like where we'd be asking, like, hey, CTA, anything, you know, we should be checking out for today? Because we know, like, that's what y'all be on. Like, y'all be on it when it comes to, like, all the threats and, you know, the threats that's, you know, regarding your company or just anything that's going on. Like, I know our CTA team was big on, like, Ukraine and Russia when it first dropped off, and, like, people leaving NATO and all that stuff. I mean, I have some of those things, like, a lot of stuff CTA was talking about. I get them to my phone, like, in my Slack channel. Like the people that I help or just in my community. I have like all these RSS feeds from like multiple sites that I trust. But that's dope. What I like to do is actually briefly talk about like your background. It don't have to be, you know, long drawn out, but it's interesting that, you know, you started off in finance and now you're in cybersecurity. And we'll say like kind of, you know, what did you do in finance? And then we'll get into kind of when did you see the light and what, you know, made you decide to pivot, you know, into something else?
Yeah, I definitely have what's considered a non-traditional background. That comes up a lot when I talk to people. I didn't finish college. I don't have a college degree. I don't code, which surprises a lot of people as well. I would like to say the main thing that I could say about like my journey is I was born and raised in Oakland. We already have a hustler's mentality. We can figure out anything. So once I set my mind to something, I don't know, I just can figure it out. I've always had this ability. When I was working in finance, that kind of actually started because my uncle, he had a company where he was doing like credit repair services, stuff like that. And I don't know, he saw some potential in me and he had me work with him for a summer. So I would be calling like mortgage companies, negotiating like repayment plans for our clients and being like, I need a better deal than that. Like I'm like 13 disputing information on people's credit reports, getting it deleted, helping them improve their credit scores and stuff like that. And my uncle paid pretty well. And so I did that as a teenager for a few years. And I was just like, okay, as I'm, you know, getting ready to graduate high school and stuff, I've been doing this finance stuff for a while. Like I know about the mortgage industry. I know about credit and debt. I know about risk. So I just figured, okay, maybe someone else will pay me to do that too. and that's really how I got started in finance. I started working for like a mortgage company at one point. I worked at B of A. That was the last finance position I held as a credit analyst. But after doing that for a while, I started thinking, you know, I want to do something a little different. And I was living up in Sacramento. And when I decided to move home, I was actually just going to apply to another bank or, you know, for another finance role. But when I came home, everything was different. Different types of people, different, just everything was different. It wasn't the same town that I left. And I started asking around, like, hey, what's going on? Like, what's different? Everything is also super expensive now. People want to live in West Oakland now, which was not the place most people wanted to live when I was growing up. And they were saying, like, it's tech. The tech is here. It's all because of these tech companies. People are coming from around the world to take advantage of these job opportunities. And so I was like, oh, well, if I'm going to live here, I need to be able to afford to live here. So I started kind of poking around. Looking at different jobs, and a finance role at a tech startup came up. And I was like, I'm going for it. Like, I read the job. I was like, I've been doing this for years. The company doesn't matter. What they do doesn't matter. I can do this job. And that's how I got my start in tech in 2013. That was a contract compliance role. So I like to describe it as operationalizing money. So it's a startup. They have investors. They give you the money, but there's always conditions attached to it. And so some of those conditions were around like credit and like title ownership for property. So this is all stuff I knew. And I got that job. I enjoyed that job for, I think, 3 or 4 years. And then I was like, oh, can I do something else? And I tried to learn to code. It was not for me. Shout out to Python, though. I do see your value. But sorry to all the coders. But I did still want to be like closer to some of the technical work. I took a couple other finance jobs while I was figuring it out. And in the background, I always would read cybersecurity news. I just thought it was interesting. Like, I think Target was one of the big ones I remember specifically following for a while. And what stood out to me most and what still even like intrigues me now in my work is that people always think of like hackers and hacking and all these big breaches you hear of in the news as these super complex, you know, super technical things. But what I started to pick up on even before I worked in security, that a lot of it is just a gap in controls. So, you know, threat actors aren't necessarily doing anything super complex or technical. They're just taking advantage of gaps in the process. And so that was kind of the thing that made me feel like I could do this. Like, I could tell them, like, don't give your third party vendor access to your payment card system. Like, that's common sense. So I think November of like 2017 or 18, I decided, okay, I'm going to really pursue this. And I started studying for my first cybersecurity cert, just using like YouTube and a book I got off Amazon. But I'm impatient. So after I felt honestly like comfortable with my skills and the knowledge I had, I started applying for roles and I started getting responses that I couldn't believe. Amazon, Okta, and where I am now, Twilio, all hit me up for interviews. And I ended up going with the Twilio offer.
Man, you said, you know, you said this a lot. I'm going to have to hit you with this real quick.
I've been doing this for a long time.
Because it was like so many times I want to jump in and ask you some questions. Like, I know I'm going to start from the beginning and see what I can remember.
Yeah.
When you was doing all the stuff with your uncle, did that birth the bougie blurb? Because you said he was paying pretty good. Is that what birthed that?
I've always made money. So, I mean, even before that, like, I would babysit. I did work at, like, an aunt's childcare that she ran out of her house for a few summers. I would do hair. So I always wanted to make my own money. I'm not sure like where that came from. I didn't grow up with a lot of money, so maybe that's part of it. But I always felt like, okay, just because like my family doesn't have another lot of money doesn't mean I can't get these shoes if I can earn the money myself.
Hey, that was me. I was saving up to buy Air Force Ones in middle school and high school with my money. So I definitely feel you on that. But you. I said like I've got a stutter problem, but in all honesty, it's like the fact that, you know, pretty much that's elaborate, you know, details on like what you did to get to where you're at. And it's, you know, doable and repeatable by other people because you set your sights on something and you did it and you just started realizing different things that you could speak to. I want to say you probably spoke to those things, you know, in the interview, especially when you said a gap in controls and that taking care of threat actors. I said, okay, she's getting in her duffel bag now. That's how she be talking. That's how she be writing up things up. Because I already know, because the funny thing is, like I said, I used to work at Target. So I was there when people were scared to come in and buy stuff just after that.
Yeah.
That whole HVAC crap, which is like you said, it's not that big of a deal. Like most breaches happen because it's something simple. Like you said, a gap of controls. Or honestly, this, I'm going to go a step further. I'm going to say negligence. Because 9 out of 10, somebody has been warned about what happens. Like,
yes, exactly.
If we go back to the SolarWinds incident, they talked to them, oh, an intern did it. No, they didn't. Y'all just want to save y'all ass. Like, no, y'all did it. Y'all didn't get an intern that much control.
If an intern had that much power, that is negligence in and of itself. So still your fault.
That's big facts. That's big facts. And then I like though too though, like how you said, you pretty much use what you had to break into tech by going like looking up at like a tech, you know, startup and saying, okay, I could do that. And I'm pretty sure like you just started pivoting once you just started really looking at other things that have to do with like cybersecurity. Cause anything but compliance, like one of my clients right now is she's been doing like banking, finance stuff for like 10 years. And so she's like in this cybersecurity boot camp. And I was telling her, I was like, have you did audits and stuff before? She was like, yeah. I was like, you should go the GRC route. And I was like, you should look into the CISA because you already conducted audits and then you just need to get familiar with the terms and you should, you know, be able to pivot like, you know, pretty easily once you understand what you're talking about. So I just like that you just brought up realistic stuff and like how you were able to do it. Cause you know, that was pretty cool. Especially, you know, I think CTA or cyber threat intelligence or whatever people want to call it is like very interesting because I think it's one of the things that people don't talk about. Cause everybody thinks like you gotta have on the black hoodie and be a hacker and know how to code to get in cybersecurity. I'm like, it's so many different avenues to get in, and yours is one I think that's underrated. I think it has like a low barrier to entry, but it's pivotal and essential. I don't think people understand how essential it is. Like the fact that you said you will always read cybersecurity news, and you know, that's just a correlation. Like it's probably other people out there just like you that are interested in the very same thing that doesn't really know, I'm interested, but what do I do? Or what does my skill set merit to get into this field? So I know you talked about like the different interviews or some of the bigger companies you got, like, so you've recently been at the Twilio role, right? Were you in between the Twilio and the startup? Were you anywhere else between those two roles?
Yeah, I went to a couple places. I went to another a small startup. It really wasn't a fit. There was like a really interesting dynamic between the work they hired me for and the work I ended up doing. And honestly, what ended up happening was the work they hired me for, I figured out how to do in 2 days out of the week, and they didn't plan for that. So I had 3 days out of the week where I had zero work. And I raised the concern a few times. And I mean, I can't sit there for 3 days out of the week, let alone have to commit there.
Listen, you sound like me. You seem like we live the same life. Because it was funny when I'll go back to earlier something I forgot to say.
Parallel universe, you know, are you my like multiverse alternate?
And then when you just said that, I just thought about battle rap and Charlie Clips. But when you were talking about the Gemini stuff and you're saying like you got surface level knowledge, like a lot of things, like I'm not a Gemini, I'm an Aries. And people peg me as a know-it-all. I'm like, I'm not a know-it-all. I just know a lot about different things. And then the stuff I don't know a lot about, I don't speak on. I just walk past that. So I don't know nothing about that. I keep going.
Say, hey, I don't know. If you really want me to know, like I can go and learn or figure it out. But
the thing that gets people, I guess, with me is like, I am a person, and it could be simple things like me and my girl like getting to this all the time because it's not necessarily I want you to be politically correct, but I don't like misinformation. So I'm going to say, if you say a word wrong or this or that, like, where is that? Like, you said this, but where did you get that from? Like, I'll ask you that. Or the way I'll formulate, like, a you know, reply to somebody, you might say, I just do the key. I know what I was like. Nah, I just want to get my point across and I want to be concise and clear. And some people don't like that. They see that as combative, but I was like, oh, well.
Yeah.
I think it only offends the people who don't know as much as you. Anybody else, they're like, oh, okay, I'm good.
I feel like it does speak to maybe some insecurity on some people's part. Because I find that a lot of people who are the most insecure at work are the people who feel like they have to know it all. Like, I don't care if I don't know something, I'll tell you. That's not going to make me feel any less of my, you know, think any less of myself, like if I don't know something. But the people who feel like they have to know, that's actually, to me, a little bit of insecurity.
Right. And then it's just the funny thing about, like, you're talking about, like, you figured out how to do all your work in, like, 2 days. Reminded me of, like, my last job. I just left from Goldman Sachs. It's like, I was working remote, not doing nothing. just to go commute an hour to work and sometimes not do nothing, just be BS, yeah, make myself look busy. I'm like, you know,
that's the dream for some people, but
right, because a lot of people don't know, like everybody else, and this is not one of those privileged talks. Like, I see this a lot of people get like a little upset or whatever, and I need to clip this because it's funny. People that's not in tech or in the industry, if you would tell them your salary or something like that, and you tell them what you was doing, like at that job, not doing nothing, oh, I would have stayed there, milked that money, right?
Yeah.
But they don't know. I'm just like, that's fine if I want to do that, but I'm trying to learn so the next gig I can get paid even more, mm-hmm, and do less work. But if I just do 3 years and not learning nothing, then my value then went down, and it's going to be harder for me because the industry always changing on some new stuff we need to know. And yeah. If I ain't got no skills I've been built up over 3 years, I'm not no good.
Yeah,
and that's what people don't understand.
I think it's a mindset thing too. Like, I haven't found the most articulate way to describe this without offending anyone. But I think there's a mindset to it, right? Like, it's easy to say that you would stay in a job in that situation, but you probably wouldn't have that job in the first place. Because part of the type of people that would want to do that work, they love the hunt of solving problems, right? They can't just sit there all day. I literally got stuck yesterday for like 4 hours trying to figure out a bug in TikTok. Just like, why isn't this working? And that's why I do the work I do, because stuff like that comes across your eye and you're not going to say that's somebody else's problem. You're not going to say, oh, I'll just sit here until someone else figures it out. Like, the type of mind you have to have kind of to do this work well, at least, is one of like, I'm going after it. I'm going to learn. I'm going to be curious. I'm going to figure this out. If you don't have that, then you probably won't get in the first place. Because that's what we're here to do, is solve problems at the end of the day. Like, yes, it's our job, but our job is to solve problems.
Bingo. I couldn't have said it any better than myself. I couldn't have. Let's see. Now, I'll get into a little bit of like, we talked about a little bit, then you said cyber threat intelligence. So now for the audience, kind of explain to them what cyber threat intelligence is and then tell them a little bit about like what you do.
Okay. Yeah. I really wish I would have looked up the textbook definition before this. but essentially it's taking information about threats, and they do need to be relevant to you. Otherwise you'll be searching forever. But you take that information and you essentially process it in a way that makes sense for the organization that you work for. And by processing, I mean either investigate for more information, tie it to other data that you have or have been tracking, make sure your stakeholders are aware of this information, make sure it's disseminated properly, make sure you're collecting feedback from your internal stakeholders so that you make sure your mission is on point and you're not all over the place with the data that you're monitoring or the threats that you're tracking. It doesn't help me to track, you know, some actor out of North Korea if they never had a motivation to target anyone in my industry, if they only go after like healthcare, for instance. That's nice to know, I guess, but it doesn't help me in my daily work. So I'm looking for like the keyword here, and my manager always backs me on this, is relevant. Is it relevant, right? Because there's a world of threat actors. They run huge organizations. Think of like a Walmart. There's threat actors who run organizations as big as Walmart. And they're very organized, they're very strategic, but if they don't have, you know, the motivation, the tools to actually do anything to you, then you don't need to spend a lot of time on that. In my daily work, since I've only been doing this for maybe 7 or 8 months now, I mostly spend my time setting up like different monitoring for our team, again, for relevant things. Writing some of our biweekly threat intelligence reports, either on the industry news or things that directly impact us. Right now, I'm actually working on my monthly threat intelligence briefing. It's my month to brief. So we'll put together information about different threats that make sense for us. And then a lot of my time has honestly been spent learning. My manager has been very supportive of me coming into this domain and has given me an unlimited amount of resources almost to really like go and get my skills up, you know, around like analytical analytical thinking, around just like understanding how to classify threats, track threats, stuff like that. So I know I'm in a very privileged position to have like that level of support for sure.
That's dope. That's dope. Like, to be in like good organizations, like, is really underrated. Like, people really don't understand either how good or how bad it is until they leave you somewhere.
Yeah. And,
like, I recently just started a new job with JP Morgan, and I'm doing something totally different. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I'm still trying to see if I'm really like it or not. I ain't gonna lie. I think I will, but this has just been week one. It's just been putting me like in a lot of meetings and stuff like that, which is kind of like, you know, if somebody even been in the game as long as me, I feel like it's not overwhelming, but it can be confusing. Cause I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, I really don't even need to be in this meeting. So I just go in them just so, cause I don't know these people yet. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in a DFW area. All of them are in Ohio. I just join them just so they can't like go back and say, oh, he didn't join the meetings or whatever. But if they do say that, I'm like, what I'm going to contribute to the meeting? If they ask me, I say, this is day number five. What am I going to do?
Maybe it's to give you like situational awareness around different conversations. Like, one thing I do pretty much whenever I start any job is I don't say a word. I don't have an opinion on anything. Let me watch. Let me see. Let me assess. And then I'll let you know if anything comes up, if anything comes up.
Yeah, so, definitely.
You'd be surprised though how sometimes you join those meetings that don't seem like they impact you too much. And a month or two later, you're like, dang, they was talking about that. And now I kind of see how that could connect dots. So definitely, you know, good luck with that. I don't love the onboarding process at most companies. but, you know, try to take it the best you can.
What's onboarding? My last job, like, I have a whole video. Like, it was funny because I had it on my Patreon at first, and I just put it on YouTube, and everybody just starts seeing it and whatever. And it's, like, entitled, like, Why I Quit Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. And it was not.
I actually saw that. I was a little investigating on you.
Okay.
Had to make sure you were legit, you know.
Okay. All right.
No, but it's, like I said, it's just funny. Like, you know, for me and my coworker, like, she started a month after me. Like, it's no way possible I should be like helping her more than the people that's been there longer than us helping us. That's pretty, you know, that was pretty wild. And, you know,
unfortunately, that's pretty standard. in working in tech and working in cybersecurity, you know, I have definitely walked into companies that you see on billboards and, you know, they got all the stuff, you know,
tell the truth,
but you get there and they don't have no processes, no internal processing, no onboarding plan. My manager, when I first started at Twilio, after my like generic company onboarding, she literally sat me down and she said, okay, here's the system where stuff comes in. Use your best judgment. And I've been using my best judgment for almost 4 years.
But no, I mean, I feel you. Like me and my manager had a talk. He said, look, he's like, I brought you in because you already know what you're doing and you're going to get pushback on pretty much stuff that don't make sense. You know, you're going to ask them like, oh, why are we doing it like this or that? I was like, I have no problem doing that. Whatsoever, because I always been like that. Because if I know an easier way, I'm like, that don't make sense. Like, before I left, because I helped them go to ServiceNow, like for the ticketing system. Because some of the ways we did incidents management didn't make sense to me. I was like, well, now that we got this, y'all should do it like this because this makes more sense and it's less time consuming.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna just pose the same thing to them. I mean, and I really don't care because now I'm at the scenes like, you know, you can't just say what you want to be, because he was like, look, hey, we bought you in, like, and you're used to finance and then fintech or whatever. Like, you say, we bought you in as a VP, so you can say what you want. I was like, bet, say less. I will. And I've been, you know, also making other friends to where I'm like, if I don't like this team, I'm just like, hey, man, look, I like what y'all do.
Yeah, don't be afraid to keep your options open. Like,
I'm a man. You know, we never had problems with that.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's a whole different subject. No, but with jobs specifically, keep your options open. Don't stay where you're not wanted, needed, happy. Like, the way I look at it is if I'm online, I'm working, like, I made a choice to do that today.
Oh, yeah.
Until definitely. I make a different choice.
Definitely. And no, I mean, I've said this like on previous podcast episodes, but it's like, treat your career and job search just like you do your relationships, you know?
Mm. Is it a good fit?
Right. And then give them a couple months. If it ain't, you know, on to the next one. And you find somebody good, hold on to them. Now, the only difference is when it comes to your career, is like, it just depends on what they're going to do, is like how they advancing you. If not, you know, you can always go to some, like, you know, old people. And I want to say they probably was born between 1960 to like 1980. We're going to call them people old people, because my parents are included. They were taught, hey, you stay somewhere a while so jobs can know you loyal. I'm like, nah, I don't care about that.
There's no loyalty here.
These if jobs ain't loyal.
For me to work for you, we won't be working together.
Right.
I'm not loyal to you.
But
not to the company. I'm loyal to the work. Which I think is very different.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, to the cause and to like what you like to do. Like, you know, for me, it's just that, and I was thinking about this right when you brought up what you were talking about. Oh, to keep your options open. It's like day one when I went to office, shoot, I took my threat modeling book. I would start reading it. He was like, how are you reading a book on threat modeling? He's like, I'm going to have to introduce you to the guy that's on the threat modeling team. And me and him chopped up. And he happens to be a brother. So I'm chopping up with him, and we can probably do lunch or something when I go in the office. So I'm like, hey, I ain't gonna lie, I don't know what this is. This is something different. I have a SecOps background. So I'm like, I'm not feeling this. I was like, I'm gonna say, you know, if I want to get, you know, internally, you know, go to a different role, how long that normally take? I'm just gonna be, you know, honest with him. But
how long would it take?
I don't know. That's what I'm gonna ask him. I don't know yet. Because some places it's a year, some people 6 months. Because like I talked to my old coworker at my last company, and he was telling me that, like, he said, yeah, if you would have told so-and-so, they would have took you off our team in a heartbeat. I was like, he was like, because they know how to talk to the managing director. I was like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. But it's just the fact for me, like, I ain't going to lie, I'm not going nowhere that's making me pay for parking. I'm just going to be.
No, you pay for that.
Right. That was my first job, having to pay for parking. And we're going to like $30 a day, four times, 4 weeks. So that's like $120. I calculated. That's, man, that's close to $1,500. I was like, that's a lot of money to park.
Get your real estate workplace people down there to negotiate a deal with the parking lot.
And y'all pay it. It's going to be a write-off for y'all anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. There's literally no reason I should be paying for parking to go to work.
Listen.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Well, I hope things work out better in the new role.
Yeah, I mean, you probably briefly looked at my day in the life. I'm already liking it anyway, just because I like the campus. Mm-hmm. it make the day, like, I only have to go in the office right now 2 days a week. They might try to do three, but I think I could finesse two. I'm like, man, I'm new. I ain't really doing much. Do I got to go up there three? I mean, want me just up there, but you know, I still got to get used to like this freaking, you know, Zoom fatigue. Hey, shout out. Listen, hey, I'm on a podcast right now. Somebody just paid to get a resume done. So shout out to them, because that's money. But hey, right. Hey, listen. Yeah, I better get them now with the prices low, because when I get super busy, they going up. And I'm probably gonna start charging based on like what career level you're in. So I'll get like an entry level, mid to senior or whatever. And then if I get super cold, you know, people get like those director level resumes. So I'm like, look, some of y'all can't really, I'm not going to try to like make y'all pay for a lot of them. Y'all ain't making them much, but y'all got to pay some. But since we're going into pay, I've been trying to always remember this question, like for the podcast, right? And without being too specific, what is the pay like? And granted, I know you're on the West Coast, but I know a lot of companies, honestly, sometimes pay you based on like where they're headquartered at. Like, I remember I had a company, like one of my second jobs I did last year, don't tell nobody, but they was basing what they was going to pay me based on what they would pay in the area or whatever. So I know you're in the Bay Area, but what, you know, what is that type of role, if you say on an average, whether entry level. And I don't know, do you know if you are you considered entry level? Are you mid-level, senior? Do you know like what you're considered?
I'm mid-level because that's what I negotiated. So I always say you get what you negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
As far as pay, there's multiple factors, right? Where you live, your levels of experience, background, education, all that stuff. The industry. A cyber threat intelligence analyst working in the government won't ever come close to making as much as I make in the private industry on the West Coast. That's just because those factors exist. Same skill set, probably similar work, but most companies pay based on different factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me in Intel, like I said, I'm considered mid-level, and mostly that's because I already worked here and I negotiated to stay at like the right level as part of my transfer. I wouldn't accept a job offer under like 175, but what you really want to be thinking about is total compensation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's base, right? Say my base is 175. What I also want is equity. And a lot of companies throw that around. So it is on you to do your research on like the company, the direction you're going in, the type of product or service they provide. If you find a technology to me that I would say a good like barometer for judgment is like, does it solve a problem? Not just because it's fun or nice to have. Does it solve a real world problem? Does it help people down from enterprise to the consumer level do business? Does it help people from enterprise to consumer do something easier? Those are the companies you want to look for because those are going to be the opportunities that could potentially change your life as far as total compensation. So I make my base salary and then I have equity that vests 4 times a year, which puts me in like the top 5% of America as a single woman. I never thought I would make the kind of money that I make now. But there is definitely a game to be played around compensation. Definitely. And if money is your primary motivator, then you better learn that game.
Yeah, definitely. I know, like, for me, it's the same way. I mean, it depends. The funny thing, like, the job I have now was not the job that would have potentially paid me the most. However, because I just was tired of my company, I was like, you know, I'm finna GTF. Because I know I can always spin the block. Just like I spent the block and got this one and other things, I can always do it again and say, you know what? Hey, guys, I didn't realize working in fintech, it just ain't for me. Because I ain't going to lie. It's a little different. I come from more technology-driven spots to where, like, they're using up-to-date, like, applications like Microsoft Teams, of course, Zoom and stuff like that. Like, I'm tired. I don't know why everybody in fintech still on Skype. Like, I don't know why.
And Outlook and Jabber. Oh God.
Oh yeah, I know about Jabber. I like Outlook. I like it a little bit better than Gmail.
It just reminds me too much of working in finance.
That's what it is, because the thing is, and I don't know when the switch is going to hit for them, because like they still doing a lot of stuff on premises. So I've been telling a lot of people, you know, like one of my friends, he got like a background in insurance or whatever. And he's trying to pick up AWS. I'm like, hey, if you learn AWS and do all this stuff, you have no time if you want to get a finance role, because they just finna get into the cloud.
Yeah, they just are getting to the migration stage.
And it's like, it just, you know, it seemed like a little bit behind. So that's kind of some things, like, because I've realized simple things like tee me off, like the fact that I'm in like a group like Skype message, or I actually am also getting upset, like a lot of these finance companies like don't have work laptops. They want everybody to work out these Citrix VDIs. Mm. They work from home, which I really don't care for. I want like something dedicated.
So you provide the device and download the client. Yeah.
I was already used to it because that's what all of them do. Like, is there, like, it's not, I'm starting to see, like, okay, only thing that's different is the name and the pay is a little better, you know.
Yeah. Like, but that's why I said, you know, motivation being money versus like what you're paid, because like, say for example, myself, I could go and get more money. There's always more money.
Always.
But I think staying where I am, learning with the support that I have, developing my skills in the environment that I'm in is going to pay off more in the long term. So I know it's hard to say because I feel like people always want to fight me when I say it. Like, don't chase them. The money will come. You don't need to chase the money. Chase the development. Skills. Chase the skills. Chase the business acumen. You know, chase the network. Those other things will come. The money will come easily if you're on top of those things.
That's facts. Because I know right now, me and my buddy, like, we're trying to figure out how to finesse, like, it's like, we know it's a gap in cyber between all roles. So his skill set is like running SOCs. That's what big of my skill set is. We're like, shoot, we should just figure out to start something, figure out what companies having issues, like finding these people and training them. And they should pay us to do that shit. Like,
I love that idea because a lot of teams are not as mature as they should be. And with the rate that threats are evolving,
tell them.
You would clean up. I support this dream. Can I get in on the ground level?
Listen, I mean, one of my goals, and I keep on saying it so it could be like, it can happen. Like, I feel like I'm 30 now. I feel like at around like 50 or whatever, it might come sooner. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember when I had this, when I started envisioning this, but it's like, if anybody checks this podcast, it's mostly like Black people, especially like Black women, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've envisioned like making this vast network of people that are skilled in different things. So it's like, I say all of us is like freaking at the top of the top or really close to whatever we're doing in our companies or whatnot. Like, why don't we just combine our knowledge to make this super company and really put everybody on notice? Because what I find is like, I've been around the block so much. It's like, you really think some big of these big companies know what they're doing? They don't be knowing what they be doing.
Not always. And I think that's a path that's not even like, it's not like outlandish to say that. Like, there's precedent for that. A lot of the same companies people love to talk about, they were started by employees that worked at the companies that mm-hmm. people still are dying to get into, right? They didn't stay there forever. Tons of Amazon employees, tons of Google employees, tons of Microsoft employees went on to start companies just as competitive, you know, using the skills that they gained from those companies over time. Even the CEO of the company I work for used to work for Amazon. So, you know, it's not, you know, a pipe dream to think like that. It can be done and has been done multiple times over. I think us as a, like, the Black community needs to take advantage of those opportunities because we see problems that other people just do not see. One of the main things that has helped me in my career is just the fact that my perspective is usually so much different than other people in the room. I just see things they don't see because I've had a very different lived experience, both in and outside of the workplace. And so I'll raise questions that, you know, they haven't considered or throw an idea out that they haven't considered. And it comes across like some super genius, but it wasn't work. It was just something that I noticed based on where I am. And I think that we need to start trusting those instincts a lot more. You know, we always laugh when companies like miss the mark on like marketing campaigns and diversity. And you're mm-hmm. like, why weren't any Black people in the room? It's because of that. A Black person would have caught a lot of those things just because of how they lived, you know?
I agree. Or, I mean, I just have to always be devil's advocate. They just don't care. Like, so it's one of two things when it really gets to it. So yeah, and that's what this podcast actually serves a purpose for. Like, I have two little girls, so I am team girl dad. Mm-hmm. And they're two, and then Zelly will be 9 months this year, mm-hmm. this month. But representation is a big one. And I'm gonna go back into what you said about, like, you know, money. And it's like, nobody comes from like a lot of money and like imagining what you make. Same thing here. Like, you know, to look at what the recruiters put in the thing and like, you could tell them, oh, you know, I'm good. I ain't interested right now. And you know, most of the time it's more money than what you already making. And it's just, you know, it's different. And then what I found is on this tech journey, the people that you knew, everybody can't go with you. And you're going to meet, you know, new people along the way that's going to more align with, you know, what you own opposed to what they own. Because I got a set of friends that, you know, one time he was talking about, it was actually like my cousin, you know, Shout out. I mean, if he watched, I don't know if he really watched my podcast, so it's not me talking down on him, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And he was saying he had got like I think a $3 an hour raise or whatever, you know, at his job. And I think at that time I was switching to my new job. I'm like, man, shit, I just got, I think at the time, I think the new job was, that was like a, what's that like, a 50 or 55K increase, like a year or whatever, like overall. But it's like stuff like that I can't say, because then they go, oh, you got it, you big money, or you know, big thinking money. I'm trying to say, right? I was gonna message you about that being big money, because we see what you're whipping in, you know.
But did you see the story before that?
No, I didn't see it. We're gonna get into it and right after this, or you know, they think you're like trying to like, you know, stun on them, but it's really not like.
It's just your reality now. No, I definitely have learned a lot of lessons on that front, especially around boundaries. I've talked a little bit about this before, but like, there's so many things that come with changing like economic class, especially comparatively to the people around you, that seem like good problems to have, but they can be hella stressful. You know, if people aren't always asking you for money, then they're throwing it in your face, you know, or, you know, changing the way they interact with you, even though y'all have known each other forever and you haven't really changed that much, you know, or, you know, jealousy, or, you know, you lose relationships. It gets lonely sometimes to not have anybody to talk through your big ass tax bill with. Like,
that's like my homegirl. She a travel nurse.
Man, cry a tear every year. Like,
that's why, like, I had kids.
No, not why you had kids.
They help a little. They help a little bit. This,
you deserve whatever they do next. But that's it. It can get lonely, and so you kind of find yourself. At least I found myself kind of feeling like I'm straddling two worlds, right? Like. Because I'm making new friends in similar, you know, situations who I can like get some of these thoughts and feelings off with. But then I'm also have my friends where I feel like I kind of have to shift a little bit, because I'm not trying to like, you know, stun on them or anything. That's not ever the case. It just, you know, sometimes if, you know, you're talking about certain things, it just doesn't hit the same with certain people.
Right. Definitely. And then sometimes, you know, I'd be like, man, you like them people make you do overtime and shit for that. Like, you see what you see what I do. Like, why don't you tap in with your fam so I can put you on, so you working less and you can do what you like to do?
It's funny. Before I switched from finance, I was dating a guy who does network engineering, and one of the things he loves to do is put all his homies on. He like, man, come to my house for 2 hours every day for 3 weeks. You will get a job making over 100K in a month. I'm gonna teach you everything I know. And he said the amount of people that just will not even take advantage of him offering free network engineering training to help them get the certifications. Like, he just does this because he felt like, I'm trying to put people on. He offered to teach me network engineering, which missed opportunity for me, because a couple years later, I needed to get back into networking. but yeah, like, that's part of it, right? Like, people are saying like, oh, this and that. And then you say, okay, well, let me help you. Let me teach you. And they just don't want to do it.
Today I got time, cuz.
It's because the game is meant to be sold and not told. Coming into what I'm doing now, I realize people don't want nothing for free. They want to pay for it. And psychologically, it probably has to do with something you're going to appreciate more, opposed to you getting something for free. And that's the thing. But I always respect the people that take the free game and run with it. Like,
I'm that person.
That was me. And I always talk about like my stories in 2013. My uncle, who's a pastor, he was talking to me about what I'm trying to do in school, whatever. And then they had just got this guy that joined a church. His name is Eddie. Shout out to Eddie. Eddie was in the military. Well, he wasn't in the military no more. He had a government job. You know, all the government people, they be getting the IT certs or whatever. He's like, yeah, man, you should get the Security Plus. And then I looked at the material. After a couple of days of talking to him, I went and got the book and started studying. And I ended up getting that cert that same summer. But that also made him really start like really fooling with me more. Because like, I'm the same way. If I tell you to go do something and then you get on it, I was like, I'm going to rock with you. I'm going to actually pretty much be your mentor without saying it. Because I'm like, you show me, you're going to listen to me, you're going to put in the game. And I had to learn that. Like, I got, like, we still on family. I have, like, younger cousins who wouldn't listen to me opposed to, like, their friend who's no blood to me, who's, like, really now, like, a little brother to me. Like, I'm in his wedding this year. Mm-hmm. He would listen to everything I say, soak it up. And now, you know, we ain't on the West Coast, but, you know, if you go within 2 years where you was making in 2020 50K, and now you're making over 150, because listening to me, it's like, it's a no-brainer. And you try to get the same people that's related to you to listen, they don't want to listen. And yet don't be the same people that be complaining about money stuff or want to say big money and stuff. Like, fam, I tried to help you years ago. You don't want to listen.
I'm gonna beg you though.
Right.
And I always say, people, the best advice I can ever give people, if they want help specifically, like they see people doing what they want to be doing and they want to engage that person, the number one thing I've learned, people love to help people who are helping themselves. People love helping people who are helping themselves. When I would approach the cybersecurity people at the jobs I had, even though I wasn't working anywhere near them, I always led with, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I've learned. Okay, this is where I'm stuck. Or if you have time, can you help me understand this topic? Like, I've already got this part, but this part is really kind of like I'm struggling with. The second they notice you doing things on your own, they love to get involved. People love to be a part of like a hero's journey. They love to be a part of something they think is bigger than them. People love to help people in general. People want to be a part of your journey, but you can't approach them generically. Like, people don't have time to help you figure out what you want to do. You have to figure out some of that for yourself, and then they can help like shape and guide you maybe with some information that can help you. But at the end of the day, the keys are in your hand. And my mentor and I talked about this a couple months ago, actually, because he asked me, he's like, do you know any other Black folks that are interested in like being mentored by like a VP? And I said, I put the word out there a couple times. No one's hit you? And he's like, no. I was like, oh, okay, that's the best I can do. Because at the end of the day, people want the keys. But I'm not going to, even if I had the keys, I wouldn't give them to you because you don't understand their value, because you're not doing nothing for yourself. And that's the point you just made about people valuing things they have to pay for versus something that's free. It's an inherent value system that's holding them back. Because you'll wait till you get $3,000 for that course that you don't know. But I could tell you in an hour some things that can help you get further ahead, so you can even decide if that course is worth it.
Yeah. Listen, you preaching to the choir. But, you know, before we get, I don't even know if I could tie that section. Like, I don't know. It'd be something interesting. I did want to ask, like, for the people that's watching now or listening, if they wanted to, you know, get into cyber threat intelligence, what are some skills you believe they should have, and what can they do to like start applying like next week? Not that fast, but just
The first thing, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but I have said this before, it's not super likely that you're going to start your cybersecurity career in cyber threat intelligence unless you already worked in like the government, which is the background I see most commonly. It's just not usually the first cyber job. It's usually a little bit down the road in your cyber career. Not impossible, but that's just that's the path I generally see. As far as skills, the most underrated but highly coveted skill you can get, not just in cyber threat intelligence, but in cybersecurity in general, learn to write. Learn to write. Learn how to translate highly technical subjects into layman's terms.
Did you read my book?
I didn't. But in my cybersecurity career, the first year, I knew it was make or break. I was like, okay, I'm either going to really love this or realize I wasted 9 months of my life trying to get into this. And the skill that was helping me compete with people who have worked in cybersecurity years writing. One of my first big projects, writing a security white paper for our website, doing presentations, talking to auditors, being able to speak their language.
Mm-hmm.
Learn to write. It will get you so far. And I'm a naturally gifted writer, but I have definitely taken like little classes and watched little videos to help me improve, even because business writing is still a little different, right? After that, or even before that, technically, but my favorite skill is writing. I know a couple of people have said this already, but learn the foundation of networking. If you don't understand how a computer works, how information is transmitted across the internet, you will struggle. You have to understand these things, especially in the world that we live in now, where most things are done over computers, you know, over the internet. That's how attackers are exploiting vulnerabilities. That's how, you know, people are taking advantage of those lapses in controls. It's not because they're walking in your office and, like you see on TV, plug a USB and do some stuff. Like, no, they're sitting at their house probably. Or, you know, somewhere else. And if you don't understand how those connections are made through the network system, you know, learn the OSI model, like figure these things out, because that's going to take you so far. After that, I would say be open, because one of the first pieces of advice I got in my career, a man, he told me, decide the types of problems you want to solve and follow those. So just because you see me working in cyber threat intelligence, maybe you don't care what threat actors are doing. Maybe you care more about, you know, being a part of like the active fight and like security incident response or something, right? Follow the problems you personally like to solve and just keep doing that. That's, to me, the guiding principle for my career. Like, if I don't want to solve these problems, then I need to move on.
Hey, I couldn't say any better stuff. Like, and I'm just nodding my head because you're just... pretty much hasn't been any person that I've like brought on, like where we didn't say like the fundamentals and we threw up networking in it, just because it's just one of them things. Like, you got to understand, you know, whether you got to be really technical with it or just bare minimum, you know, understanding of networking, you know, will keep you afloat. And like, funny thing is, like, my new job has to do more with networking than anything I have to do. It's like, we deal with, I want to say like firewall rule violations. Mm-hmm. So as many different, all these application owners are submitted these rules to be put in, and how they've been using them and what violations and what type of IP addresses and all this stuff. That's what I know on a surface level. But just the fact, like you said, like any given job, like you got to understand it. Like, yeah. You know, even me when I was doing the SOC stuff, like, you know, looking through a SIM, seeing, you know, all these bytes of data going out, like, you know, what's that? Is that a lot? Is what that mean? That's not a lot.
Yeah.
Like, what am I looking at?
Is that a little? Because the numbers are small, right? Like 16, 24, like it looks like, oh, that shouldn't be harmless. But if you see that going out multiple times a day at weird hours, it might be bigger than you think, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And
yeah, you just... so, I, you know, the security principles, that's layered on to your understanding of networking. So before you can even really think about security, and I had to figure this out is for myself, you know, I picked up the security book and they were talking about networking. I'm like, okay, got to take a step back. Like, I understand a little bit about like computers and networking, but there's a lot more to it that I didn't. And I went back and took networking classes on YouTube before I moved on to the security classes and the fundamentals of like cybersecurity principles.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just can't go nowhere without it. But I did briefly want to, you know, mess with you about like what made you want to be a TikTok influencer?
Oh my God, no. That is not my dream.
No, but okay. You know, I'm not going to lie though. Like, this is me, right? Like, now I have this podcast. Mm-hmm. I have the YouTube channel. I got the other business and then other things that go through my head I'm thinking about starting. But for the longest, I'm so upset because it took me 2 years ago to finally realize I've been using social media wrong. Why wasn't I using this to make money? Right? So, no, but like, the people post so much stuff. These people getting so much free content off of us and everything. And they stealing ideas from us off Twitter and all these other things. But we ain't getting no money from it. We just so happy. Oh, look at my child. And they, you know, they turned two. But
yeah,
like, And so I'm not saying your goal is, but I think your page has, like, you know, picked those things. Cause I see, like, you get a lot of likes and comments. I don't know if you've been reached out to for, like, any type of doing any ads or any type of sponsored videos yet, but I'm just like, you know, what made you decide to do that though?
I got one brand reach out to me. I think it was like an educational, like a tech education brand. Honestly, that was never my goal. I actually went to a lunch last year. It was like a work-related offsite thing. Mm-hmm. And a couple of my teammates were talking about how addicted to TikTok they are, how they love it, they learn stuff, and it's just funny. It's a good time. I was like, well, I want to have a good time too. And so I made the account. And, you know, the algorithm shows you stuff based on, like, what you engage with. And so before I figured out that TikTok was dramatically oversaturated with tech content, that was all I was seeing. And so I just thought, like, oh, people care about what you do for work? Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I can make some videos about that. And so I started making, like, a couple videos. Like, people were like, what do you do for work? What do you do for work? And I'm like, all right, I'll make a video about it. And they engage with it. So I was like, I didn't come here necessarily to talk about work all day. But if I have time, like I said in one of my videos, if I have time and I'm in the mood, then I'm happy to, like, answer questions or, like, make videos about different things I'm doing. But it definitely wasn't with the goal of being, like, a tech influencer specifically. Like, I came to laugh and joke and waste time to not think about work. But it honestly has been really interesting to see that, like, engagement and see that people are interested in what I do. Like, I always thought, like, oh, people don't care about this. It's boring. Like, man, you know, please. But they do.
My biggest video right now on YouTube, and since you said you researched me, I don't know if you watched this one, but it's my day in the life video. And I actually plan to do some more. But, like, people would... That's one of the ways, like, I teach people, like, if you're trying to figure out what you want to do with cybersecurity, it's like, go research these different roles. You see day in the life of blah, 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 day in the life. Like, see if you actually like what you see. Instead of just thinking you want to do something just because you heard somebody make some money, you might not want to do that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's my other half of my message. It's like, I'm not here to influence you to get in tech or influence you to get in cybersecurity. I prefer you to do things you enjoy doing. I prefer you to follow your personal passions. Like, I understand, like, making a higher salary can support a lot of that. So do you by all means. But I don't think in any scenario I could do the work I do if I didn't actually enjoy it or find it interesting or, you know, have problems that would get me out of bed in the middle of the night to get my laptop and go do a little more research because I had a new thought that could lead somewhere. Like, you can't do that for any amount of money, not over a long term, a long amount of time. It's not sustainable. But I, like I said, I do think it is really cool that people are interested and I want to keep making videos. But it really is up to, like, my mood and how I feel. Because a lot of times it's hard to spend a lot of time recording.
Trust me.
The last thing I want to do is make a second job for myself. But, you know, I try my best not to, like, hyper glamorize it as well. Because I noticed that's a thing that social media has done with the tech industry. These are things that I would be doing whether or not y'all saw it or not. You know, this is just my daily life. If you enjoy it, by all means. If you think it's boring, also cool. Like, it's fine with me.
Yeah, I'm kind of washed because, I mean, if I ain't out, like, out, I ain't really going nowhere because I'll be feeling like driving, gas, the kids. It'll be hit or miss with me.
Yeah,
like we talked about earlier with the TikTok content, it's like, I'm going to attempt to, like, because I already know really the game for TikTok is kind of answer questions, show people stuff, make the content good. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the game. Like, I know, like, my reels do way better than, like, my TikTok stuff. Like, reels are, like, easier to get, like, looks and stuff on. But the reason why I asked you about that is because, like, I've just found, like, marketing myself and, like you said, writing. Like, I'm working on a blog piece that I hadn't finished yet, but all those things bring you, like, so many different other opportunities outside of you just were good at your job. Like, I'll take people to start hitting you up for stuff. And that's the whole reason.
That's how we got here.
No, because I'm different. Like, when it came to this platform, I didn't really seek out to go find the person that was already the person on LinkedIn or something. Like, oh, I'm finna go reach. I just say, if I like the people vibing, you know, how they look or whatever, I'm, you know, we are visual people. I just hit him up like, would you be interested in, you know, being on there? And after talking a little while, then, you know, we normally have like good episodes and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, same.
I'm
not big in like celebrity culture in general. I'd rather follow like normal people doing kind of normal things that they think is interesting. Like, that's interesting to me. Like, some of my favorite accounts, like there's Alexis, who does the Black Foraging account. You know, there's a woman I follow who does knitting. She'll just sit with like music blasting, knitting. Like, I like to see what other people are doing that they enjoy. Like, some of the celebrity culture and like influencer content is just, to me, like too inauthentic.
Right. I like the car detailing videos.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those.
And cleaning, the people cutting the grass. Like, it's to be so soothing. I like when people get like the, you know, they get the dermatologist like removing a bunch of stuff on their face.
Oh, I don't like that one. Well, I watched a couple, but I can't get into it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to me.
I mean, I think, you know, people probably underestimate like TikTok's impact, or maybe they have, and maybe they're kind of getting it now. Mm-hmm. But it's been so weird to me to like be thinking about something like right now. I've been looking for the perfect vacuum to go to TikTok before Google.
Wow, that's crazy.
Before anything else. Literally will look like best vacuum on TikTok and get tons of results of real people using different vacuums, saying how it works over a long time. Like, and I noticed that shift and I was like, wow, like this app has something that's much different than other platforms. You know,
I'm that's sure interesting because I don't use it like that. I mean, I just go on there and scroll. Like, I don't really like, I guess. And then I think the thing for me is because I'm such a YouTuber. Mm-hmm. I go to YouTube first. Like, if I want to, like, I use Final Cut Pro. I'm trying to do this. Oh, how I do this with the camera. I go there because I like the long form content and it's normally broken down for me. I like my phone, but I'm in a space where I don't try to be on it like as much just because we are like, I got to have these blue lights on sometimes. Like, I can't sleep good or I'm getting sleepy or Zoom fatigue. Like, I don't know. It's just a lot with, I will say that's a thing that I never thought like growing up, like I'd have all these screens in my face. Like, I mean,
yeah,
I had the Game Boy Advance and all that when I was younger, but the TV and stuff, I don't know. I think that's a little different, but, I think two things I'm going to ask you is like, do you guys work with like different companies? Do y'all get like feeds from different companies? Like, for example, when I worked for Optus, right, we had a segment. I want to say, I don't know if it was Cyber Threat or whatever. Maybe it was, but they do like dark web searching and then they go look at all these different things. Is that what y'all do too?
Definitely. Definitely, we're always searching, again, relevant threats to us. So based on what we think is the biggest threat or most relevant, like, we'll build monitoring around that.
Okay.
So from like a risk and priority perspective. So yeah, we do have like a couple different enterprise threat intelligence feeds. We check them to see if any of our alerts have gone out, you know, stuff like leaked credentials, you know, people doing dumb stuff, publishing to GitHub or whatever. Right. We don't want that out there. we also have like our brand protection, right? Like, a big part of like how some cyber threat actors are successful is by impersonating brands that people know and trust, right? So if you see a domain go up with your logo and it ain't you,
oh yeah,
you probably don't. Okay, want so that
yeah, I do. Yeah, I do the same thing. As like, at that time, the platform they were using was called Insights. That's what they were using. And then I know at the same time, our client that we were supporting was also using us and Digital Shadows for the same thing. So they felt like they were just like waste of money using both things.
Yeah. So that's a big part of what I learned, you know, in the time that I've been in Intel, right? You might have multiple platforms, but you're trying to achieve very different goals and then kind of meet in the middle, as far as like whatever your priority threat intelligence requirements are. You know, you don't need everything, you know, try to be very specific with your resources. Cause one, these things are not cheap. But two, you want to make sure you're getting value out of them. Make sure you're driving like maximum adoption. A big thing that my manager does that I think I'll carry forward in my career is like making sure to prioritize the relationships with those vendors, right? You know, you want to have a close contact relationship with them because they're sourcing information that you're using to make business decisions. So making sure you understand that you're using their platform to the maximum potential, making sure if new things come up, you're aware, you know, making sure that you, you know, are checking in with them on a consistent cadence and really building those relationships beyond like customer, you know, of their business. It really helps because I can reach out to one of my Intel reps on Slack, you know, and say, hey, I'm noticing like the collection for this thing is not the same as it was last week. Can you look into it for me? Don't need to go through no support ticket or nothing like that. He's going to go take care of it. And that's really important. And then, you know, you have the vendors who do proprietary reporting like CrowdStrike, you know, making sure you understand what they are providing and how you can use it. Yeah. So that's a big part of it is like knowing what tools you have and how to best use them. I'll be working on something and I'm like, dang, I feel like something's missing. What am I missing? And I look in one platform, I'm like, okay, maybe I'm tripping. Like, it ain't really much chatter on this out there. Nobody's talking about us. They don't care about this. Then I go to another platform and it's everybody was talking about it for 3 days. I'm like, man, mm-hmm. you just have to understand your tools. And then, you know, collabing with other teams has been something that's been really helpful recently, like other Intel teams. What are they seeing? How are they, you know, solving some of the problems that they come across that are similar to ours, and just being able to have contacts at those different places, right? Like you don't want to be in the middle of like an attack or an incident and you need something for Google and you don't have a direct contact at Google, or you need something from Amazon or AWS and you don't have a direct contact at AWS. Like that's critical time. So that relationship building is a big thing that I've noticed that I think my manager does well, and I hope to continue in the future as well.
Nice. Let me see. What do I want to put on here? Maybe this is it. There we go. I had to figure out what we was in and out on. But I don't want to keep you for your whole afternoon. This honestly has been like a great conversation. And listen, check this out, guys. What y'all don't know is most of my pocket guests, I've never said probably more than like a couple of messages to. So this is like our first time formally meeting. So y'all meeting her just like I am, and look how it turned out. But this has been great. Do you have anything you want to tell our listeners as far as I have your socials, they'll be in the description. But I mean, for the people that's listening, do you want to tell them where they can follow you at?
Yeah, I'm Bougie Blurred on TikTok. On Twitter and Instagram as well, but I'm gonna just warn y'all, I don't really be talking about work that much on Instagram or Twitter. It's mostly just my reality TV takes and whatever emotional breakdown I'm having that day. But at least you know it's real. Okay. Specifically on TikTok is where I'm like more inclined to answer questions. If you comment on one of my videos, if I see that question enough, then I may make a video reply to it. That's kind of how I've been operating as far as like tech content. Usually it's like user generated because they ask the question. I hope to do more, I guess. You know, I've been out of kind of the podcasting and like space for a while. I used to do a lot of talks and stuff. So nice to do it again. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, thank you, man. Y'all already know what it is for me, man. Y'all know how to get to me, you know, it's a textual talk. Y'all really been showing out this past week with all these downloads to the podcast. And look, y'all need to keep on because this is a good one. Who knows? I like to run my podcast back a lot or even make it a live one. But I appreciate everybody that's been rocking with me. Shout out to y'all. Share this out to somebody who's trying to get into cyber threat intelligence. And you know, if you need some cybersecurity help, go ahead and book that consultation. Link will be in the description. But until next time, let's stay textual. And we out.